All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Joe Sinnott on the line with us, Whitting Partners, Energy Detox Podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
Well, spring is in full swing here in Pittsburgh, Jason, so doing all right. We got some sunshine. We got a T-ball game tonight. It is a new season here for us in Pittsburgh, for sure.
Well, you know, spring is in the air, definitely. We have spring baseball happening. We have spring happening, kids getting ready for graduations. We've got NFL draft. We even have playoffs starting in basketball. So a lot of changes in the air. I know I named a lot of sports things, but sports seems to really does dictate a lot of what we have in cultures and what we do at our workplaces and that sort of thing. But I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the passing of O.J. Simpson. And I wanted to kind of spin that into a little bit of your executive coaching world and see if we can't, you know, really analyze just some of those instances that we talked about as a culture and how that can be kind of a reflection at the workplace. So did you follow much of the OJ life?
I don't think follow does it justice, Jason. I mean, the OJ trial was in my formative years of life. So I remember coming home from school, again, growing up on the East Coast. So, you know, still had a couple hours of the trial on TV when it was going on. So I was all in as a, I think, sixth grader when the OJ trial was going on. And again, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but you'd probably be hard pressed to have found another sixth grader who was as into the OJ trial as a young Joe Sinnott was, whatever that was now, 30 years ago.
It really changed the real dynamic of so many different things. It was a paradigm shift for the media. It was a paradigm shift for the law system. It was a paradigm shift even to elements of the Constitution in some regards. And so when I look at just the reality show that it became, it really became America's first reality show. And I used to joke that Kato Kaelin was America's first reality star. And he's still, you know, profiting off of that moniker of being OJ's pool guest boy or whatever his official title was back at the trial. But, you know, you had celebrity judges now. You had all kinds of different things come out of it. So for me, as far as the trial goes, the media and the changes that really happened within the professional world of the media, that was one of the things that I took away from that outside of the obvious. What was, you know, from your perspective as, you know, professional bent, maybe it's an executive coaching side, maybe it's just a cultural side, maybe it's a humanitarian side. Was there any sort of bent that you took out of it that maybe didn't get talked about as much as you wished it would have?
I don't know if I have anything that wasn't talked about as much, but, you know, definitely now, you know, looking at it with, again, 30 years of perspective and especially in the working world, in the corporate world, I would say I view it primarily now as a, you know, as an opportunity to talk about justice, right? You know, was justice served? Was it not served? Was it okay that, you know, if he really did commit the murders, that he got off because it was an opportunity to point to some of the problems within the LAPD? You know, it's interesting because so many conversations then that, again, I wasn't as aware of. And looking at him now, though, they really are all about justice, right, Jason? So, you know, whether we're talking about life or legal matters, or of course we can go off on a tangent and talk about the justice system and our former president, Donald Trump, who is, again, on trial here as we speak. You know, it all comes down to, hey, is justice being served? What does justice look like? Is it fair? Is it not fair? And it's amazing whether we're talking, again, in, you know, very public trials like OJ or Donald Trump, or whether we're talking about, not trials, but certainly justice-related conversations within my own family, you know, managing thoughts about fairness for young children and their concept of justice and you know, what is equitable. You know, it's funny because, right, the O.J. Simpson trial and again, the 3 decades that have passed since really cover a lot of justice-related themes and concepts and conversations, right, Jason?
Going back to the media world of how it was covered, the OJ trial was covered. One of the instances where Time magazine got in trouble was they manipulated the photograph of OJ to have it appear more dark so that he would appear more guilty. And there was a lot of psychology behind the cover photo, and they got in trouble for that. And so when I think of justice, of course, when I think of the media world and justice, I think of trust as a very big, it's a method of currency. You know, honestly, is that if your media source is trusted more than another person's, well, then people will come to you more and they will trust your information more. And that is true in the corporate world. And that is true in the business world. And Joe, talk to me about how the world of trust is something that can be used as maybe that intangible currency that corporations and businesses, I kind of threw a G in there for some reason. How businesses, maybe that's a new word I can trademark. That's mine. You hear it, trademark stamp. Let me get the date here. Okay, 11:00 a.m. All right. So, Joe, talk about trust as a currency developing at the core, which is your executives and your business, or your employees, if you will.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly. What did you say? Business gives? Is that how you work in it, Jason?
Well, the thing is, the first S I hit, it was the next two where I turned into two G's. So like biz, I egg is so it was just, it would have worked probably in the Harry Potter world as a new cool character, but I don't think it works for a professional conversation.
Well, hey, Jason, on this conversation though, we'll take whatever we got in front of us and we'll weave it together. That's whether it's OJ or new words or whatever comes up. But in this case, if you did say business gives, I think that speaks to what businesses can give or probably specific leaders can give to their employees to build that trust. And that is clarity, Jason. Offering up any sort of clarity about what they're thinking, about the rationale behind decisions. Now, again, clearly, businesses and high-level leaders can't share everything that's going on in their mind or in the business. I mean, that's how corporations work, and that's okay. But when they have an opportunity to share what's going through their minds or how they're applying, again, justice when it comes to promotions or to discipline of certain employees or whatever it is, that is an easy, free way to build trust. But it's one that is severely underutilized, Jason. And I see it all the time. When I'm working with individuals, it's, hey, you know, your people are wondering what's going on inside your head. And sometimes for an individual leader, you know, he or she doesn't even realize that there's this perception that they're holding back. And whatever it is that they're perceived to be holding back is fair game. They can share it. There's no reason not to share it. And when they do open up, Jason, it removes a lot of that uncertainty, right? A lot of those moments of wonder for employees, and it builds trust. So you have that clarity, you boost the levels of conversation and the connectedness, and now you can actually make some progress because you're not spending your time dancing around or wondering or speculating or whatever. So again, I think if you want to cut through, again, some not so subtle OJ references there, but if you want to cut through some of that unhelpful wondering and curiosity and, people speculating, open up, share what's going on, share your rationale with the people that are working for you, and you're going to have that trust.
Joe Sinnott is our guest, CEO of Whiting Partners, also the host of the Energy Detox podcast. We're going to transition from what we learned from OJ Simpson's life, legacy, etc., into another form of just when the spring baseball happens, you really are establishing trust more than anything. You want to know which players you can trust in the leadoff position. You want to know who's second, but you're also starting to build your team, if you will. And you know, there is a little bit of a justice theme as well with putting together spring baseball because of competition. So it's kind of funny because a lot of people think, you know, oh, sports, that's the toy department. Yeah, it might be, but you can really learn a lot, especially when you're sitting around with some, you know, some colleagues and you're watching a game. You don't necessarily always talk about the players. You do talk about the coaching. You do talk about, hey, you know how fun it'd be to run a baseball team? And then you start talking about how your personal executive position can be running the Syracuse, you know, the Syracuse Skymen. There you go. There's a minor league baseball team I just pulled out of my hat. But when you, or the Toledo Mud Hens, you know, and one day maybe you'll be a part of the New York Mets. But, you know, let's just transition from trust and justice and fairness. We'll transition with that first over to spring baseball, because there's so much that really an executive can learn from what goes into spring baseball. Joe, talk to me about, you know, do you smell what I'm cooking?
I think so. And I think, you know, what you're cooking up there is consistent with the first item on our menu from today's conversation, which was about, you know, the benefits of sharing your thinking, sharing your rationale. So again, case in point, you think about a baseball manager in Major League Baseball early in the season, tinkering with lineups. You know, the manager that goes out to the media before or after games and shares what he was thinking, you know, shares his rationale behind a given lineup and, you know, why you're playing certain players in certain places and why you're putting them, you know, at certain points in the batting order. You know, that manager now can spend a lot more time, you know, focusing on what actually matters instead of having to answer all of these silly questions from the media or from the, you know, sports talk folks who are trying to ask these gotcha questions. Now, on the flip side of that, again, Jason, coming back to the corporate world, you might say, well, you know, does the leader of a company really owe, you know, investors or the media a soundbite or information? You know, again, does a coach or a manager in sports really owe the media an explanation? And the answer by and large is no, but what's the upside of sharing that information? You know, what are the benefits of getting rid of some of that speculation so that now, again, you know, you can control that narrative? Because if you are a manager of a team and your team, especially if they're underperforming, and you have a fan base that is getting fed information or thoughts or talking points or speculation or whatever from the media, and now you've got a fan base that, again, is not so hot on you and your decisions because they don't understand your rationale, that inevitably is going to bleed through on the field. Your performance of your team is going to suffer if, again, there's all this extra stuff swirling. So the key is to slice through all of those distractions, if at all possible, by sharing your rationale. You might not be right. People might not agree with your decisions, but at least if you're articulating what your decisions are, it's pretty clear, right, Jason? Now, again, you're not giving as much ammo for people to call in and wonder what's on, you know, so-and-so manager's mind and whatever, they can deal with that. But I find that in the corporate world, especially, if you're clear about why you made a decision and you share it, and again, it happens to be the wrong decision, it's a heck of a lot easier than making a decision, not sharing your rationale when you can, and now letting people sort of, you know, run rampant about, you know, well, you know, what was even going through this person's mind? So again, similar to theme to what we talked about, Jason, but it equally applies whether you're managing a team or a company.
But one size does not fit all, because sometimes, you know, you have Bob Jones as your manager, AKA the umpire. And over there, you got Sally Smithers, who's the umpire as well. And strike zones change. And sometimes you get a new policy that says, you know what, we're going to change the strike zone. Did they just change the strike zone too? So, aha, Joe, we got two layers now where we can even introduce some new change. How are you going to tackle that one?
Well, if you're talking, oh, again, well, we'll weave it all together. Well, I guess if you're talking umpires, and again, the reaction of a manager.
Policy change. Well, all of a sudden the EPA says, hey, we got to do strike zone, pal.
Yeah. So, well, we'll be talking for hours if we're talking about how to interpret and adapt to EPA and other governmental regulations. But, you know, sticking with baseball themes and, of course, our corporate tie-ins, you know, you're right. You know, strike zones change from game to game, certainly from umpire to umpire. So, again, what do people want? What do players want? Again, you don't have to watch much baseball or listen to much baseball to know that overall, the one thing that players and their coaches and managers want is consistency, right, Jason? They want consistency. And again, it's no different in a corporation. People want consistency. What drives individual employees nuts is when there is a gap, or at least a perceived gap, between the written rule and the unwritten rule. But at least if the unwritten rules are consistent, then it's not as big of a deal. But now when you have unwritten rules that are inconsistently applied and you have a written rule, which is, you know, completely separate, now you've thrown things into chaos. And again, it's no different when you're talking about umpires, right? You know, umpires now, you know, not only, you know, just again, this is the nature of the game, right? You know, there's been a little bit of subjectivity. There's the way that a given umpire is positioned behind a catcher can influence whether or not they're able to accurately call a ball or a strike. There's all kinds of various things in play. But at the end of the day, as we sit here in 2024, Jason, those same umpires now are faced with the reality of extra scrutiny, right? Extra, maybe you could say transparency, because of all the data and the strike zones that are on every television broadcast, that you could see. So how, if, you know, again, we can go a lot of different directions here, Jason, but, you know, how do you, as a leader, how do you, as a manager, how do you take that extra information, you know, that extra layer of judgment, if you will, that is being applied to umpires, and make sure that your players don't fly off the handle, as was the case recently with a Pirates player, because they don't agree with the strike zone? You know, how do you work with an umpire whose strike zone is inconsistent? How do you, voice your displeasure about a strike zone when you know that, you know, still here in 2024, you know, that is the one thing that, you know, you cannot argue and that will get you ejected from a game? It's an open question, but it is one that if you take some time and think through it, which typically you can't do in the heat of a baseball game, you know, you can come up with some creative solutions, some long-term solutions, especially when, again, you've got 162 game season, you're going to see those umpires, you know, over and over again. You know, what is your long-term approach so that you kind of build that trust with the umpire where, okay, you know, if you do voice a little displeasure, then maybe he's going to take you a little bit more seriously. And he doesn't just think that you're barking for no reason. Same thing with many players, right? Who've been around the league for years, right? You know, certain players gain that respect, which you could argue is a form of trust, right? You know, an umpire trusts that if a player didn't swing at a borderline pitch and there's two strikes, that, hey, you know, maybe there's something there. So, you know, I guess the moral of the story is, Jason, bringing it back together, you know, clearly with short attention spans, we can focus on, you know, what's going on in that game. But the strategic, long-term thinking manager, player, coach, whatever, is going to recognize that building relationships, even with umpires, can be used to your advantage so that, you know, 120 games into the season, now you've got that slight edge over your competitor who didn't take that same approach. So again, maybe a long winding answer to your question, but the same types of long-term strategy that's necessary in business clearly is manifested when it comes to managing entities, if you will, like the umpires on the baseball diamond.
Well, we got one more pitch coming your way because, you know, actually, the minor league baseball system has already been disrupted by the AI movement because they have some robots calling balls and strikes. I don't know if they're still doing it, but I know they tried it in a minor league game or two. And I think in Canada, they tried it as well. So the robots now, we can even make an AI comparison because whether it's analytics from the front office in minor, I mean, I bet there's more analytics done in minor league baseball or during spring baseball than probably any other time during the year. And then you layer in the umpires as well. So can you take one more pitch with the AI disruption revolution with the comparison of spring baseball and how executives are currently faced with that disruption?
Well, again, it's a question. Clearly, disruptive technology, disruptive innovation is typically good, right, Jason? If it is applied in an appropriate way. And what I mean by that is, and again, we're kind of moving in the sort of the corporate environment, but if you're doing it, if you're applying these technologies in a way that your employees still recognize that, hey, look, they have value. They are human. There is a purpose. They're not going to be replaced by this technology anytime soon, which is by and large true, You know, there's a lot of overemphasis on, hey, AI is going to take over and eliminate all these jobs. But by and large, when you peel things back, you know, we are not at a point where human beings are going to be replaced in, you know, many corporate roles. Baseball is a little bit trickier, though, right, Jason? You know, in baseball, especially when you're talking about balls and strikes, the technology is largely there. As you said, they've been trialing this technology in the minors, where teams now, I think, you know, they have a couple challenges and they can challenge balls and strikes. And clearly, you know, they have an eye towards potentially implementing this at the major league level. And so that's a case where, you know, you need to address the elephant in the room. And that is, do we want to preserve the, you know, the human element and the opportunity for arguing balls and strikes that has arguably made baseball what it is in so many ways, right? You know, disagreeing with an umpire's call. Is that something that's worth preserving? Or do we simply embrace the technology that allows us to know with, you know, more consistency and certainty whether or not a ball was a, or a pitch was a ball or a strike? That's the fundamental question, right? And again, obviously, many people have many different opinions on this. But the problem is in corporations when you don't voice that question, right? Hey, do we want to preserve this approach? Do we want to preserve this antiquated way of doing things or traditional way of doing things in favor of you know, ignoring or, you know, some technology that could help us advance and move forward? Those are open conversations that, again, are probably on the minds of your employees, consistent with what we've already talked about earlier in this conversation, Jason. Why not air those out? Say, hey, look, we're wondering these things. We're asking this question. Don't assume that we're not asking this question and we're happy to just dismiss tradition in favor of this new technology. And conversely, don't assume that we're just going to ignore this new technology or not fully embrace it. We're just going to half embrace it and leave it in the minors in favor of tradition. The leader who can articulate those questions and share that, hey, look, we're having these conversations. We're having these tough decisions about whether, again, we should acquire a new company or whether we could, you know, should sell the company or, you know, divest of some product line. Again, when you have the opportunity to share that you are indeed wrestling with these questions, you might not have all of the answers yet. You're going to build that trust, Jason. And again, that applies whether you're talking about Major League Baseball, whether you're talking about energy companies, whether you're talking about, you know, even within a family, right? You know, big questions that parents might be wrestling with about whether to, you know, change, you know, move houses not go on the standard family vacation that you've been going on for the last 10 years. Talk openly that, hey, you're wrestling with these conversations. You're interested in some feedback, and don't allow the narrative to be that you're just making some short-sighted decision when, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth.
Analytics are being done quite a bit in the NFL draft as well. Joe Sinnott is our guest, founder, executive coach of Whitting Partners. He's the host of the Energy Detox podcast as well. Analytics, of course, we were just talking about in baseball, how it's that and AI. The NFL draft is coming up. Analytics are a big part as well. Even the AI portion of it. But the leadership, I mean, you have coaches that come from different walks of life. So is he a defensive coach? Is he an offensive coach? Or is he a former quarterback? Or is he a former lineman? So you even have layers. And that's really interesting because, Joe, when I used to do the publishing and we would partner with newspapers, in fact, we had 5 newspapers we were partners with in Pennsylvania, where you're from, Washington, PA, which is just south of Pittsburgh, and Easton, Pennsylvania, where else? Harrisburg, and I think Hershey was another one, and Wilkes-Barre up in the northern part of the state. But at any rate, when we would meet with the newspapers, we would always have kind of a little bit of a side bet when we met the publisher, what department they came from after our meeting with them, because you could always tell if they came out of sales, you could always tell if they came out of editorial, maybe in the rare case they came out of circulation, but just kind of what their language was and what they kind of kept their eye on and what their expertise was and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the successful publishers were the ones that understood how to surround themselves with people that were smarter than them, so to speak. So let's talk a little bit about the NFL draft coming up, because Man, there's a lot of different ways you can slice and dice this, from the AI side, analytics side, to, you know, the war room conversations, to the power plays behind, to the, hey, it's Johnny Manziel. He's a generational quarterback. He's going to change your world, man. Let's talk. What do you watch the NFL draft at all? By the way, I should start off. You're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, right?
I am a I grew up a Giants fan growing up in Northern New Jersey there. So, you know, once you marry somebody from Western Pennsylvania and have four children here, yes, by default, you are a Steelers fan. So I guess I probably shouldn't have been as slow to answer that question as I was there. But happy. I would much rather see the Steelers win than any other team. How about that? I guess that defines me.
Well, take a look at what's going on there with Russell Westbrook and not Russell Westbrook, Russell Wilson, Mr. Unlimited, and Justin Fields, to where you have two players, you know, so you got two good managers or two good executives, whatever the case is, but you got a legitimate competition here. And there's a little bit of politics behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, the idea is the Steelers are supposed to benefit. The customers, meaning the fans, are supposed to benefit. So although you got this little side drama going on, the bigger picture is we're supposed to make money here. We're supposed to win a Super Bowl, and the fans are supposed to get their money's worth. So I like that actually as kind of the starting point. Let's start there. I'm going to hand the pigskin off to you on that one, Joe.
I'm on the clock, as they say during the draft, right?
There it is.
On the clock. Well, I guess in terms of giving the fans, the stakeholders, the audience what they want, I think the secondary question, Jason, if we agree at the end of the day, you know, that's who it's all about. And again, you might disagree there, but let's start for a moment and say, hey, look, it's about the fan base. It's about, you know, again, giving them what they want, which is a winning team. The secondary question to that, though, Jason, is, all right, are you looking long term? Are you trying to, you know, lock up a 10-year stretch of success for a team like the Steelers or any other team? Or do you want to win right now? And again, that's definitely the example of a false question, an unnecessarily black and white question that should be avoided. And any sort of general manager or team owner or coach or whoever's making the decisions is going to say, hey, no, we want to win now and we want to win later. And we're not going to entertain that conversation. But the reality is, you know, there's decisions that would be made for long-term success versus short-term success. And when it comes to the draft, again, and to answer your question, no, I don't invest too much of my time and energy following the draft. But what I can say is, and again, marrying it back to the decisions that leaders have to make in corporations, the long-term versus short-term decisions that you make when you're drafting players or recruiting players or trading for players or whatever, they're very similar to the same type of decisions that leaders have to make when it comes to recruiting potential employees or hiring employees or whatever the case is. And that is, do we want to fill a specific need that we have right now that is glaring, that, you know, clearly we have this need that's going to get us up and running and have some wins, if you will, some success? Or do we want to bring in a talent that's maybe not as defined, but is clearly the best athlete, if you will, or the best all-around employee that's going to need a little bit more molding, that's going to bear more fruit 4 or 5 years from now than on day one? And again, that's another one of those fundamental questions that leaders obviously need to ask, but can also share with their internal stakeholders to help guide their decisions. You know, if you're sending all of your various analysts and your scouts out there, are you having them look to fill gaps? Or are you having them look for the best all-around player that can maybe shift positions or bring some intangibles that, again, might not bear fruit on day one, but might help you 2-3 years down the road? So again, obviously there's no one right answer to that, Jason, but it's funny because it's the same exact decisions, the same exact line of questioning that is happening for everybody who's, again, making decisions around the NFL draft, as is going on in corporations. And where things go south, of course, is when people don't ask that question, right? Or they don't articulate that question so that they can start getting the right data that can point them in the right direction. you know, if you just go blindly through the draft and you just pick, you know, whatever some analyst says is the, you know, you need a wide receiver, you pick the top one that's available and you move on without asking again, hey, how does this individual fit into the bigger picture? Clearly, you're setting yourself up for failure. So anyway, I'll pause there, Jason, but that's how I view the draft. That's certainly how I view the companies that I work with and the individuals that I work with who have to make these very tough decisions when it comes to their employees, their players, if you will. And again, you know, whether they're going to deliver that long-term success for their shareholders or their stakeholders, or whether they're just looking for that short-term bump to survive from this quarter to the next quarter.
Mike McCarthy, the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, he would be on the daily grind. He'd be out there day in and day out. His job is to keep an eye on everything, every department, from the offensive line to the defensive line to the quarterback's coach to the defensive back's coach. He gets paid for that. He's the general manager, if you will. He's actually the head coach and the general manager. So he wants an offensive tackle. But Jerry Jones wants that shiny, flashy quarterback. How do you talk to the owner when the owner wants to just either stay the course or, you know, hire so-and-so's country club buddy or something that isn't going to be in the direction that they originally wanted to go, what they hired you on to do? And you're the, like I said, you're the general manager. He paid you every day to focus on this and this and this. And he just wants to do what he's used to. Times have changed. We got AI. We got cell phones. We got intrawebs. You know, who knows? No offense, Jerry Jones. I didn't mean to say you're old. But we got analytics. There we go. Joe, talk to us about how, because that's a common in corporate America. It doesn't matter if you're Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones, Joe Senator, Jason Spiess, having the general manager and the owner of the company not on the same page for whatever reason, that is a common thread. That it's in schools, it's in corporations, it's on the Dallas Cowboys. As I heard that Jerry Jones wants a quarterback. No, I'm just kidding. But talk to me about that kind of common thread, Joe.
Well, you're right. You see it all over the place. It doesn't matter the environment, corporate, sports, whatever. But what I see is most of the time, the squabbling and the energy and the back and forth and the frustration is related to those intermediate decisions, important decisions, but intermediate decisions. And typically where you want to start is say, all right, well, how do you define success, Jerry Jones or whoever? How do you define success? What is your definition of success so we can work backwards from there? Typically, again, this isn't, there are obviously exceptions to this rule, but typically a lot of the squabbling can be reduced and a lot of the inconsistencies in approach and opinions can be addressed if you get a clear, articulate definition of what success is. If Jerry Jones wants to win a Super Bowl this year, then I guarantee you that it's, you know, when they start saying, hey, here's our options and here how we can approach things, you know, they're going to be able to achieve probably more common ground than, again, if they don't articulate success, you know, because if Mike McCarthy or somebody else has some, you know, definition of, well, you know, we want to put ourselves in a position to compete for a Super Bowl, you know, three straight years. That's what we want. Not just this year, but we want to be in a position where we don't, you know, peak this year. And then whether we win or not, you know, we got this whole rebuilding campaign. So just like we said a couple minutes ago, Jason, you know, you need to articulate what your definition of success is, what your long-term vision is before you start arguing over the specifics of what kind of player you want or who you want or how much you're going to spend. And again, this seems like, you know, this is not rocket science. I will tell you, this is not rocket science, but it's amazing in corporations how often I see all of this time and energy and argument and everything else when a lot of that can be addressed by saying, hey, wait a second, what's our definition of success? What are we after here? And now let's talk about all the different ways to get there instead of just arguing over, you know, option A versus option B when option A leads clearly to one path, option B clearly leads to another path. And, you know, if that's the case, then obviously you've got a pretty big failure in leadership and in communication.
Joe Sinnott is our guest, founder and executive coach of Whiting Partners. He's also the host of the Energy Detox podcast. Pretty much all the major sports are going through a change right now, whether it's spring training to regular Major League Baseball. NBA playoffs are happening, so they're going through their change. The NFL is having their draft. We just had the WNBA draft. They have a major change happening with Caitlin Clark, with her mega stardom coming in. So there's going to be a paradigm shift with that. And one in hockey as well, they're entering the playoffs. So as we take a look at the major sports, there's not change anywhere not happening, Joe. And so it's a really a reflection on society. And so when companies stay the same, it kind of makes you go a little backwards at the workplace, Joe, because there are some things that can be done around the workplace. And, you know, obviously hiring some services like yours to come in and have people think a little bit different. So instead of looking, you know, at a, you know, I don't know, instead of looking at a circle, maybe it's a sphere or something like that, just looking at something in a different light, you know, decluttering is another example, bringing in some, you know, new plants that might change, you know, just the, some different dynamics around some new art. You know, I think spring cleaning is something that is very common, decluttering. I mentioned that, but talk about how there is this change of energy that is just a natural part of our life. I mean, from the calendar to sports, there's signs everywhere. So talk about that and why, I guess, you know, services like yours and even, you know, some of these, you know, on the Better Homes and Garden Network, where they come in and they change your office environment to give you a new spruce type thing. And the Hoarders commercials have the decluttering services. So, and I can tell you from media buying in my background, those companies, they amp up their media buys at this time of the year, Joe. That's a darn sure. But talk to me a little bit about how that energy really should be harnessed by companies and corporations rather than resist it, because it is a money saver at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, change can be demoralizing. It could be an energy drain, but it is a reality, again, especially in the world of oil and gas. And what I see when I go into a company typically is that, yeah, everybody is acutely aware of every single change that has occurred or will be occurring within the company. What's missed often, though, is an emphasis, and again, this isn't rocket science, as I said before, but an emphasis on what isn't changing. Start there, you know, because once you start listing out those things to say, hey, look, you know, this isn't changing. People come and go, you know, whether it's, you know, C-suite or, you know, swaths of people, you know, on the front lines. At the end of the day, more stuff is staying the same than is changing. So let's focus on the stuff that is staying the same, that should stay the same. You know, typically that could be something like your corporate mission or your vision, your values. Let's start there. And then, as you said, Jason, focus on sort of that decluttering, right? Get rid of all the stuff that is not aligned. And some of that can be legacy things that, again, haven't changed for years, but need to change, need to go away. And some of that could be a realization that some of the ongoing changes, the fresher changes, the new changes, again, are also inconsistent with some of those pillars, some of that vision, some of that, some of those values, if you will, that have been in place. Again, it's a simple formula. It's a simple approach, but it's easier said than done because, again, what is a leader going to do? You get into panic mode. And you say, well, yeah, the natives are restless. All they see is change. They're growing uneasy. They don't know what's going on. They're worried about the future. I'm going to try to address that, right? I'm going to try to say something that's going to put them at ease and say, hey, you know, this is the industry we're in. It's ups and downs, and we're going to navigate through it. We're going to be okay on the back end. No, that there's a time and a place for that, Jason. But go back to what I just shared. Start with the stuff that's not changing and challenge your people to eliminate, to declutter the things that aren't necessary, to empower them to constantly ask the question, hey, is this adding value? Whether it's as small as a conversation between two people or a meeting, let alone some bigger budgeted initiative or project. If you have an entire workforce that is constantly asking, hey, how does this add value? Again, not does it or does it not add value, but how does it add value? An open question like that. How is it consistent with our vision, our values? That's a healthy culture. And if you're doing it, if you're demonstrating that, well, now you're going to get to the point, Jason, where you're cutting out so much of the crap that holds people back. And again, clearly, this is not just for their professional lives or for corporations, but it's true in our personal lives, right? What are all the things that are holding you back? What are the commitments that you really shouldn't be committed to anymore? What is all the stuff in your house that you're constantly shuffling around? You're spending an hour a day shuffling things around. And again, I say that as a parent of small children, and they got all kinds of stuff and toys. And my wife and I, we spend more time than we should shuffling things around, even as our kids grow in responsibility and can shuffle their own stuff around. But it's true, right? What if we got rid of that stuff? What if we got rid of that baggage? Now, I'd say it's not just now is the time to do it. It needs to be a habit, Jason. It can't just be one single initiative once a quarter or something that you dreamed up because you listened to Jason Spies on The Crude Life, talk to somebody about decluttering. No, it needs to be a constant effort to say, how much value is this bringing to our lives? And on flip side, I'll leave you with this. You know, how would you feel if you didn't have those things? How would you feel if you eliminated those things from your professional life or your personal life? Getting people to kind of dream and you know, again, sort of envision themselves in that world, Jason. Again, this isn't rocket science. You know, this isn't me putting on my engineering hat and being overly technical. I mean, asking a question about feelings and helping people kind of sit with that for a second, sometimes that's more powerful than any tool that AI or all of our digital transformation efforts can bring to light. Asking somebody how they would feel if they got rid of some crap that you know is holding them back. So again, that's what I see. Again, it applies all over the place here, but it's one of those things, Jason, that gets people stuck. And I'd say, you know, the top things that I do, one of the top services I provide to people is to help them get unstuck.
Are you still tithing and giving back to the industry with your time and the way that moderating and joining different organizations to help them with their, whether it be mentorship or, like I said, moderating conversations? Are you still doing things like that?
Well, the beauty, Jason, of having your own business is I can, you know, I don't have to justify my time to some third party. So yeah, I'll invest whatever time I have on pro bono activities and, you know, industry advocacy and, you know, supporting industry nonprofits, you know, however I can. So yeah, there's certainly an element of that I try to incorporate into my day to day. And if for no other reason, you know, selfishly, I enjoy it, right? Selfishly, you know, getting out there and doing things beyond pure revenue generating activities, you know, it's a great opportunity to understand the latest and greatest challenges that folks are facing and, you know, weaving them into, again, conversations like this, my own podcast. And again, obviously my day-to-day work with clients in a coaching capacity, helping them connect their challenges and opportunities to, you know, whatever's in front of them.
Give your business a plug too. Witting Partners, you're the founder, you're the CEO, you're also have a podcast, the Energy Detox Podcast, and you have a website, wittingpartners.com, where everyone can find those different areas of whether it be your coaching side or your podcast side. But, you know, give, you know, that 1 to 2, 3 minute pitch to people about what your services are. Because right now, actually, for all the reasons we just got done discussing, people need services like yours more than ever. So what's the entry level? How do people get started?
Yeah, well, I guess to get started, the idea is, look, if you acknowledge that you or your team or your company could benefit from some independent support, especially energy-focused support like I provide, when it comes to making better decisions and being a more confident leader and, you know, being a better communicator, all of those, you know, high-level things that you can get from any number of sources, Jason. Because as you know, there's millions of coaches out there. There's millions of leadership development resources and podcasts and books and webinars and seminars and courses and everything, which is fine, which is good, which is there for a reason, right? Because as you said, you know, everybody essentially could benefit from this in some way. The difference is for me and my company, Witting Partners, is that, again, I am focused on the oil and gas industry. I leverage my background from, you know, 15 years of navigating the fun of existing in that corporate environment, leveraging my technical background and weaving that all together to help people, again, be more conscious, effective leaders. In fact, Jason, the company name Witting Partners is by design, because there are so many leaders out there who are unwittingly limiting their odds of success, unwittingly damaging relationships, unwittingly putting their foot in their mouths, quite frankly. And my job is to help, again, be that third party to ask questions, to weave together some of the, again, the experiences that I've had both in my former life as an employee, as a leader within corporations, and now working with many different companies. And again, seeing themes, seeing patterns, most importantly, seeing things that work to help get people unstuck and to be more effective. Being able to bring all those things together, Jason, for oil and gas companies is, again, something that I'm on year number 5 of doing this, again, building on my former life. And it's fun. I enjoy it. Hopefully some of that comes through in this conversation. And if people are interested in learning more about how exactly I do this, as you said, you can head to the website, wittingpartners.com. Certainly always happy to connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. And hey, you know, if anybody wants to go old school there and give me a phone call there, you can always call 412-444-5563. Give me a call, shoot me an email, shoot me a message on LinkedIn. Always happy to have that conversation to, again, help you identify which resources out there can help you be a more effective leader.
Once again, that's Joe Sinnott, founder, CEO of Witting Partners, also the host of the Energy Detox Podcast.